Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to Color Your Life Happy for Monday, June 11th, 2012. I'm your host, Flora Brown, coming to you from Anaheim, California. In a moment, we will begin today's episode, The Cry of Jazz and Its Impact on Today's Music, Part 1, with composer, producer, and arranger Ed Bland. Today's show is being brought to you by abookin90days.com, a customized coaching program for heart-based coaches, entrepreneurs, and speakers who want to write a book to attract more clients and increase profits. You can get your copy of the 7-Step Roadmap to Publishing Success now available at abookin90days.com. Welcome to all of you, my listeners. In order to get an announcement and a reminder of this show each week, just look under my photo on the show page, blogtalkradio.com/Flora Brown. Right under the photo, you'll see a follow button. If you click that, you will be kept up to date, and you'll get the announcements in your email, and you won't have to remember what the shows are about or when they're on or what time and so forth. Now, on this radio show, Color Your Life Happy, we talk about ways to create the lasting happiness you deserve in all areas of your life. To get at that goal, each week I interview guests from many different fields, such as self-help, spiritual journeys, relationships, change in adversity, parenting, wealth creation, business success, career, you name it. We talk about all those things because they contribute to lasting happiness. Today's show with Ed Bland was pre-recorded, and it's my pleasure to start that episode right now.
Today's show is being brought to you by abookin90days.com, a customized coaching program for heart-based coaches, speakers who are ready to write their book. It is my pleasure today to bring to you The Cry of Jazz with my guest, Ed Bland. Now, Ed Bland is considered by some hip-hoppers to be the great-grandfather of hip-hop because of the confrontational quality of his musical film work. He has left his mark in several fields. In concert music, Bland's piece for chamber orchestra was called an amazing tour de force in terms of relentless energy and build-up of tension, a fascinating song piece by Guns N' Roses. Among the groups that have performed Bland's work are the Baltimore, Detroit, Memphis, and St. Louis Symphony, the Chicago Civic Orchestra, and the Brooklyn Philharmonic. In the late 30s in Chicago, Bland began music as a jazz protege, eventually composing a tonally using Schoenberg's 12-tone system. In 1959, he produced the first hip-hop film, The Cry of Jazz. Willard Van Dyke, preeminent American film documentarian, said that The Cry predicted the riots in the American cities of the 60s and 70s. Bland used the early music of Sun Ra and his orchestra in the soundtrack of the film. Bland's synthesis of three canons of music, Western, jazz, and West African drumming, made it possible for him to work as a composer, producer, arranger, orchestrated in the recording and film industries. Among those sessions was one using Jimi Hendrix in his early days. In the 90s, after years composing, arranging, and producing in the record industry, many of Bland's efforts were sampled by hip-hop artists that led sales in excess of 30 million CDs. Fatboy Slim and Cypress Hill are artists that sampled his work. After 20 years in Los Angeles composing and orchestrating for film and TV, Bland now lives in Smithfield, Virginia, where he is finishing a percussion dance suite entitled Pandarecki Funk. It is my pleasure to welcome to the show today Ed Bland. Hi, Ed.
Hey there, Flora.
Hey.
Looking forward to this.
Thank you. Me too. And I could have gone on and on, of course, with your biography, but We just gave people a little taste, and then they can learn more about you. We'll tell them how a little later. I know that you have enjoyed this amazing career in music, because I went over and read a lot about you and looked at your cryo jazz. And it's certainly impossible in one interview to cover the many highlights. So we're just going to aim for a few powerful experiences and turning points that you've experienced in your musical career. So let's start with, what was the biggest influence in your life that led you to choose music, particularly composition, as your career?
Well, as a little boy growing up in Chicago, I was not interested in music at all. I was just playing baseball or softball.
Okay.
And my mother somehow or other got the idea in her head that I should study piano. Me and my sister should take piano lessons. And that was the most horrible idea that she could have had, as far as I was concerned at the time. But the only way I could get out of my house to play baseball is if I practiced my piano lessons. I hated it. And I graduated from grammar school. Freshman day came to the school that I was graduating. It was a high school called DeSable High School in Chicago. And the band played for a freshie. Some welcoming ceremony and so forth. I was petrified when I heard the band. It was like a white light went off in my head, and I said, that was what I wanted to do with my life. And I was about, I got out of grammar school early. I skipped a couple of grades. So I was, I think, 12. Right. And so I had stopped taking piano lessons, but here was a real interest in music. It came from me and not from the outside.
Uh-huh.
And I looked up the band leader, the conductor of the high school band, and I told him I wanted to play saxophone.
Uh-huh.
And he told me, he said, no. You shouldn't take a saxophone unless you have been playing clarinet, because the same principles that go for the playing of the guiding principles and playing clarinet are the same. The basic saxophone playing also, except that if you are going to become a professional, who knows you need, you have to double on clarinet, and clarinet is much more difficult to learn than saxophone. If you can play clarinet, you can also play saxophone.
Uh-huh.
And so, disheartened as I was, I decided, well, that's what I had to do, that's what I had to do. He said, but first, you have to take an exam, a talent exam.
Uh-huh.
And I said, oh, okay, fine. I shouldn't have any trouble. I've been playing piano for 4 years. I've played in a number of recitals. So I took this, it's called a Seashore Talent Test.
Uh-huh.
And so I took the test. And then I went to find out the results. And the fan teacher looked at me and said, a day away from music.
Oh, no.
Yeah, he said, this is, you know, in the middle of the Depression. So
uh-huh.
And he says, please fare to your parents, you know, you have absolutely no talent. Please stay away.
Oh!
Well, I felt very crestfallen. So I decided I'd better try some guitar. So I became the pleading young little kid who wants to play music. This gives me a chance. As though after an assault of that kind, he gave in.
He gave in.
And said, okay. So, first mock is due to since I played piano, I could read already. And mm-hmm. not only treble class, but bass class also. So
yes.
However, the master turned in, and he said, see, look at your mark. F.
Oh.
You failed.
Oh.
And I told you you didn't have any talent. You should stay away from music. But, okay, you know, you just have to go through it. Now, this is an impression of a student teacher and our clarinet teacher for a beginning clarinet was the Boogie Woogie piano player from Albert Ammon. Eugene Ammon was the clarinet teacher who had the NYA job at the time. And he was so busy trying to get his own career going. He didn't have hardly any time to spend with us.
Mm-hmm.
In the meantime, I was sitting there, you know, wondering, what the hell? How am I ever going to get started? Am I getting better? I can't hardly do anything on it. Nobody seems to be taking any attention. So, Eugene Ammon left because I guess he's got a gig somewhere.
Yes.
Then his replacement came out. It was a girl named Selma Cotton.
Mm-hmm.
And she sat down with me and listened to me play at clarinet. And so she said, oh, I see what the trouble is.
Mm-hmm.
We do not know how to play.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, you know, it's playing a winner. There's two things you have to do. You have to have the breath to play there. You have to divide your breath in half. So
yes.
The amount used for playing the instrument and the amount played for living.
Mm-hmm.
And so she showed me how to breathe. Okay. The end of the next marching period, I was a trumpet player.
All right.
And she, it was very interesting in a way. Because he never acknowledged to me that he'd been had made a mistake or anything.
Mm.
And that was just the way it was.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next thing was to take a test for, well, okay, all of us in the beginning instruments were in the beginning band. Okay, I played so well that I was able to jump from the beginning band past the intermediate band into the lower reaches of the senior band.
Mm-hmm.
And he never acknowledged. Anyway, in the meantime, the gang warfare in the streets of Chicago had gotten so bad that I decided that I should go to a high school closer to where I live, where I wouldn't have to walk, say, a mile and a half, 2 miles. And dodge the various horrible-looking people with their knives and guns. And stuff.
They were waiting for you. Huh?
Right. I mean, they might take my clarinet.
No. No.
Right.
Not yet.
And then I went to another school, which is an interracial school. There were a number of such high schools in Chicago, but this was right in the school district in which I lived.
Mm-hmm.
And so there I was in this high school, and I excelled. And so that's how it got started. And next before I knew it, I had all kinds of scholarships coming my way. Various people from various orchestras in town were going out of the way to look me up and to give me all kinds of very advanced instruction.
Mm-hmm.
The main problem in taking these lessons was one clarinet attitude took me away from very important in terms of my development. Was the head clarinet, solo clarinet, with the Detroit Symphony. And he experiences. So he managed all kinds of free lessons. I had a, he was in a white neighborhood that I had to get to. So if I could negotiate my way, the white neighborhood without getting killed, to get to his house, then I could study with him for free.
Wow.
And I became his prize student.
Wow.
And including it was a quite wealthy neighborhood that I had to get, through and through. And he had a lot of very good clarinetists, a lot of guitar.
Wow.
So that's how my musical career started.
That's beautiful. And then you moved into from playing into composition.
Well,
and how did you get into composition?
Well, I was after getting a lot of technical, a lot of technique. The next thing I wanted to do was play jazz.
Uh-huh.
So I didn't know how to go about it. And there were some of the guys who seemed to know how to get it. It's just wasn't coming easy to me. So I had to figure out how the hell was I going to learn. So, after figuring it out, I decided that's what I would like to do, take solos. But, if I couldn't take solos, then I could always play saxophone.
Mm-hmm.
And the sax section was the big band era.
Mm-hmm.
And most of the big band had libraries. I mean, by that I meant a whole bunch of tunes, songs. They played. That was very intricate and well, should we say, crafted to music.
Uh-huh.
Musical writing, yeah. Most of Count Basie, Charlie Parker, Dizzy Gillespie, Duke Ellington,
uh-huh.
Cass Calloway, all those were my heroes as I grew up. And I wasn't the only one, there were all of them,
uh-huh.
Because you were. So, what I decided, or the way I felt about it, and the kids that were walking home from school would argue about the merits of various players, why one was better than the other, and we all had a bunch of records that we would play for each other to support our argument. So, the way I felt was, what I should do is become a saxophonist, and that way then I would be able to earn a living, and I wouldn't be a clarinet star, so what? So, but nevertheless, what happened was I did learn how to improvise or do various things that normally sessions would occur in the neighborhood. But then I decided that, this music that I have to play in school, I can play some risky course to call, who was a teacher, whose primary student was Stravinsky. And so I was a jam session. One day, and Art Tatum was there. I was a little boy, and everybody was in awe of Tatum. And it was a home that most of us, there were a number of brothers, biological brothers, who were kin. And so they nearly every black pianist who wasn't, this was wartime too, who weren't in military service, were there, singing Tatum.
Mm-hmm.
So, I had decided that jazz was the only music that was alive. The classical stuff, I was fine. I could play it, and I could play it very well. I was in first chair on any money, but joy was to be able to solo and play jazz. So as far as I'm concerned, jazz was only music, and the rest of the stuff was death. So classical music to me was death, and so there's no reason to play it except to get technique so that you would be able to play better in your jam sessions, okay?
Yes, right.
So at this particular jam session where Katie was at, so I was walking through the house, and I heard what I considered some extremely strange music. And so I knocked on the door, and as I said, I was in your house, and everybody knew everybody and who the guests were. So one of the brothers of the family there opened the door, and so I listened. So I said, what is that? So it was the Rite of Spring, Stravinsky's Rite of Spring. And to me, I said, wow, I didn't know classical music could be alive. So, what I had to decide then for me was, first, was, did I want to do this? And the reason I wanted to do it was because it seemed so much, it had so much more power. If you could write that way.
Yes.
And so that meant that all these years, I've been playing about 5 years, and as I said, I'm very, very good, and I have a living, really, writing in front of me.
Uh-huh.
It's obvious how to make it. You know, music is a tough field.
Yes.
But it's also relatively easy to deal if you have the right connection. And if you can write.
Yes.
You got to know who your friends are. You got to be political and have the contact. And so that was it. So I decided I had to decide what I was going to do. Was I going to keep playing clarinet? Or I'm going to try to become a composer. Now, the challenge for me was to go into the unknown.
Yes.
Would I feel good with myself as a human being if I didn't give myself the challenge of trying composition?
Mm-hmm.
I may not make it. I may waste my whole life, but at least I would have given it a try.
Right.
And so I gave it a try. And that's
we're happy you did. Wow. We've been listening to an interview with Ed Bland, and because the interview was so wonderful, went on longer than the show, we're going to have a second part, and you'll get to hear the rest of this interview on Monday, June 18th, and we'll be listening again to part two, The Cry of Jazz and Its Impact on Today's Music. I thank you for joining me to hear about the beginning of Ed's career, and next time we'll be learning about his movie and how that came about. This show is being brought to you by abookin90days.com, a customized coaching program for hard-based coaches, entrepreneurs, and speakers who want to write a book to attract more clients and increase profits. You can get your copy of the 7-Step Roadmap to Publishing Success at www.abookin90days.com. If you have enjoyed the show, you've been enlightened, encouraged, empowered, please tell your family and friends about it because it's easy to access from the archives the recording. To get at the recording, you look under on-demand episodes on my show page, blogtalkradio.com/Flora Brown. You can go there anytime, select the show, and you'll be able to listen to it there. Thank you again for joining me. I am Flora Brown, coming to you from Anaheim, California. And as always, I'm going to ask you to have a blessed week and remember to color your life happy.
Color, color your life happy.
Color.
better your life. Pass it up.